morning and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Tuesday, July 9, 2024. Women who helped South Sudan's freedom fighters to achieve independence say the government has forgotten them.
Now our husbands have died. The government has forgotten us, and our husbands are the ones that contributed to this country. And now we are not remembered, the women.
And some veterans who lost some body parts during the struggle for independence say the government has ignored their contributions.
What we need to be assisted as wounded veterans. Since we no longer have energy, let the government think of us and stand strong with us.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Today is Tuesday, July 9, which is South Sudan's 13th independence anniversary. South Sudan separated from Sudan after a bitter 21 years of conflict with several governments in Khartoum. On July 9, 2011, the country was declared as a separate entity from Sudan. That's why we now have South Sudan, and we wish our listeners across the country happy Independence Day. We start this broadcast with sentiments from some wounded veterans who say they have no reason to celebrate South Sudan's 13th anniversary today. They say the government of South Sudan has done very little to look into their welfare, and many of them lost their body parts during the struggle for the country's independence. Denis Logonyi took to the streets of Juba and spoke to some veterans. He has this report from Juba.
A wounded veteran who prefers to be identified as John for fear of government reprisal says he lost his arm during a battle in the war for independence. He says since then the South Sudan government has done very little to support him.
I joined the movement of FSPLA in 1990, at the time when I was 13 years old. In 1998, I was taken to frontline in Tindilo, whereby I got wounded. So I feel sorry. I don't mean that the celebration of independence that we brought from the fire will be like the one I am now seeing today. It is just like people are mourning, not celebrating in a good faith or something good have come to them this day.
John says he regrets his time during the liberation struggle because now the government ignores him.
All the way you get people begging as if they are from another country, but they have become beggars in their own country while the government is there looking to expect the government to ask some international communities to intervene to our suffering, to open schools for our children so that our children have to learn to be better children in the future and to know that our father fought not in vain.
Veteran Peter Chute says since 2011 they have tried to meet president so he can solve some of their issues, but access to President Salva Kiir's office was blocked.
Since we got independence until today, 13 years now, and since years back we are in suffering. The campaign to have a new country, we did it. We divided the country and came to our country. Our documents are in front of the president. Until today, they didn't allow us to enter inside. People who are around the president cannot allow people to speak to the president. This is the cause of the problems in our country. Wounded heroes of the liberation do not have schools for their children. Orphans should have their schools because their fathers died here. They have the right. They should not suffer, and they should have schools for them to be the future of the nation.
Lauro Gabriel, a wounded veteran in his 50s, says despite the hard situation, he can still smile because he has a country.
What we need to be assisted as wounded veterans. Since we no longer have energy, let the government think of us and stand strong with us so that we can stand with them. We were united, loved ourselves. We fought together. All South Sudanese tribes fought, not one tribe. Now we are wounded because of this land. We were wounded and people died because of our country. We are happy, though we have made 8 months without salary, but we are still standing with our nation. I am happy on this day we shall celebrate, even though there is nothing.
In March, scores of wounded veterans stormed the finance ministry in Juba to demand payment of USD 10 million for their medical allowances. Major General Luruai Kong, the spokesperson of the South Sudan People's Defense Forces, criticized the wounded veterans for using force to demand the medical allowances. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Juba.
Still on issues of veterans, some women who participated in South Sudan's struggle for independence are calling on the government to remember their contributions for the liberation of the country. They say they took care of their families, gathered food, and cooked for fighters when their husbands were on the battlefield. For VOA News, Kaltuma Vanessa spoke to some of these women in Torit and has this story.
July 9th marks the 30th anniversary of South Sudan's independence from Sudan after 21 years of fighting between the rebel Sudan People's Liberation Army and the Sudan Armed Forces. In what was then known as Southern Sudan, the struggle for independence was the hope for a brighter future. The women of South Sudan were active in liberation causes, providing food and shelter to soldiers and caring for children and the wounded fighters. Some of these women now feel the government of South Sudan have forgotten them. Eunice Nakiru Laku, a women's leader in Torit Town, says the South Sudan government should reward women for their contribution during the independence struggle.
We contribute. There is those who are bringing water, firewood. There is those who can even grind and bring food. There is those who can go and look for wild foods. There is those who can go and collect even the green vegetables from the bush, so that our men continue to fight, and when they come back, they can have food to eat. And this is our contribution as women. So then we as women, we said, what is our role then? We fought together. We worked together. We helped you. But now you decided to say, we are women. We should stay home and take care of the children. We were managing all this, managing our families at home without them, and managing them even in the front, taking for them food, taking for them clothing, taking for them medicine.
Imuta Lili Locks is married to one of the independence fighters. She says women were the backbone of the struggle.
Nuswana can be nagde na kangili sufora. Zaman japata sika ta Uganda. Yashuya na jaligo, Uganda yaza sadina.
We suffered all this while with no clothes. We were putting on animal skin as cloth. We were on the border of Uganda. Ugandans were the ones who brought clothes, and we exchanged with a goat or chicken to buy clothes. Our suffering was too much. Now that we have independence, guns have stopped until our men got peace. But after the peace, we found ourselves in more suffering.
Lucia Loyana Moy, who also is married to a freedom fighter, says the government should remember women's crucial role during the struggle for independence.
All these areas I have moved to, and in all these bushes, I have moved with a lot of suffering. No water, no shoes on the feet. We used to drink blood if an animal was killed. The baby that I gave birth to in the bush, I used to give her urine as water for drinking. We are still suffering as before when we were in the bush. If I can find those I used to cook for, maybe they would have helped me.
Women in South Sudan still face hardship. Food insecurity, scarcity of clean water, political instability, weather extremes such as severe droughts and floods, lack of infrastructure and health care. Mary Akongo is a widow, but she was with her husband on the battlefield.
Nageni vigaba, nageni atano, aseri de beida. Sala moroka kama kwez, na besi gatano.
We were in the bush and we grained grains with our own hands, even using stones. The enemy will come and we will run and leave everything. We will stay in the bush 4 to 5 days. They will fight and chase the enemy. Then we will go back. We suffered, women and our men. Now our husbands have died. The government has forgotten us, and our husbands are the ones that contributed to this country. and now we are not remembered, the women.
South Sudan gained its independence in 2011 after years of bloody civil war. South Sudanese were united in seeking independence from Sudan, but the new country remains divided by tribal infighting, which causes barriers to lasting peace. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa, reporting in Torit, Eastern Equatorial State.
From Torit, we move to Juba, and we would like to hear from those who are celebrating South Sudan's independence for the first time inside the country. Some South Sudanese who celebrated the independence of the country for the first time in Juba say they were surprised to see the unity South Sudanese displayed on the eve of the independence Monday night. A resident of Juba, who calls himself Abraham Tito, says despite the country's challenges, he's prepared to celebrate the country's 13th independence anniversary. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Monday night, South Sudanese and foreigners who live in Juba's Gudele Block 7, 8 and 9 came together to mark the country's 13th independence anniversary with dance and jubilation. South Sudanese who fled the fighting in Sudan were among those who danced to songs performed by musician Emmanuel Kembe. David Samuel, a South Sudanese who just returned from Sudan, says commemorating the independence anniversary in Juba is a dream come true.
I came from a conflict environment, but yesterday made me forget about my problem and traumatizing situations I went through in Sudan. I celebrated for like 20 minutes, but it felt like 20 hours of excitement, and I was happy. I hope next year's celebration would be better, and I am ready and will prepare as well as look for places of celebration.
Abraham Tito lives in Juba after spending more than 30 years in Sudan. He says he was surprised to see people celebrating the nation's independence last night. He says despite the dire economic crisis facing the nation, South Sudanese, including children, left their houses to burn candles in honor of the 13th anniversary.
I toured some areas yesterday and saw people were very happy despite the fact that the situation was bad. But yesterday I saw them celebrating as if their burden and problem have been lifted from them. But they were very happy because of the independence of South Sudan. I wish South Sudan to develop and advance in education.
After 21 years of fighting between the forces loyal to former President Omar al-Bashir and the Sudan People Liberation Movement led by the late John Garang, South Sudan became the independent of Sudan on July 9, 2011. Nahla Omar is another Juba resident commemorating the nation's independence for the first time. She says South Sudanese would uphold peace, but adds the youth need employment.
They should give opportunities to young people to work and organize themselves. What I have seen is that more work is being done by foreigners instead of opportunities given to the nationals.
South Sudan has held celebrations to mark Independence Day every 9 July since 2012. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias reporting from Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, activists are up in arms condemning the National Security Act. Find out why after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Some activists and opposition holdout groups meeting in Nairobi are condemning South Sudanese lawmakers for passing the controversial National Security Bill. A founding member of the outlawed civil society group, the People's Coalition for Civic Action, Quel Aguer Quel, says the National Security Act is a threat to democracy.
As we arrive here and we have been working hard to find solutions to our issues, some development took place in our country behind us. One of these is the issue of the National Security Bill. That bill contradicts our search for civic and political space in the country. And since the National Security Bill contains sections that are allowing the national security to arrest without warrant of arrest from the court or from the legal counselor, we think that is dangerous. It's being used for political prosecution.
The government delegations at the Tumaini Initiative, when they went to Juba, they said everything is fine. But when I spoke to one of your members, he told me categorically that the discussions at the Tumaini initiatives focused on security reforms, economic and implementation mechanism, because according to him, the reason why there were delays in the peace agreement is because of weak institutions that were supposed to implement the peace agreement. Now, the passing of the security bill into an act, as you're saying, it's adding salt to injury. What is the next move of PCCA?
PCCA is calling for, first, the president should not sign but drop the section 54, 55, and 57. Those sections should be dropped. The national security remain with its mandate according to the Constitution, Article 159, that it is an agent that collects, analyze and advise. That is the otherwise, it is a violation of the Constitution as far as we are concerned. And if we are going to violate the Constitution, there will be no reason to have peace in the country, because anybody will act according to his will and according to his wish, because it is the Constitution that details the rights and duty of every citizen. The other issue is the issue of the inter-parties dialogue. They reviewed the roadmap and they came out with a report which contained a proposed extension of the R Act. To us, we think this is also a threat.
You're talking about the proposal for extension is a threat to the Tumaini Initiative. How is it threatening the initiative?
Because if you have something in progress, then you will not be able to have another agreement on top of an agreement. Because what we are saying is that the Tumaini is a tool to rescue the country from where we are stuck. We cannot go. How many times this RSS has been extended and nothing came out of it? So we think that there is something that could be done to improve the environment and make our transit to democracy in the country, to peace, permanent peace and democracy in our country. But if they think that the RSS is the way forward, then we think that the Tumaini has no reason to exist, because there is alternative that is already there. The other issue we are raising is the concern that were raised by the first vice president, by saying that the Tumaini initiative has violated its mandate. We are wondering what mandate was given to it and who gave it to it. And if there was something that is already that agreed between the government in Juba and the Kenyan government that is going to take over the situation after the end of our access, then we want to know that. Because we cannot be sitting here like dialoguing, trying to have agreement while there is something already that was there. Already agreed. So what is it that we are here about? So to us, this is actually a real concern. The other thing that is a real concern also is the closure of the registration of political parties in the country and the declaration of election dates. You know that there are major political organizations in the country that are not registered. Some people assume that the SPLM-IG is registered, but that is not true. What is registered is SPLM, and not SPLM-IG, not SPLM-IO, not SPLM, real SPLM. What is registered is an SPLM, Sudan People Liberation Movement, without an extension. The body that is being chaired now by Comrade Kalpa is a neo political organization altogether. And it is a political military organization.
I mean, the name, Governor, let me take you back. The name SPLM in government came as a result of the negotiations in Addis Ababa and in Khartoum, because there were two SPLMs. So there was a need to differentiate SPLM in opposition and SPLM in government. I am not sure if SPLM in government is different from the Sudan People's Liberation Movement.
There is nothing called SPLM in government. SPLM is a political organization. So it cannot be contained into the government. There are members of SPLM that are not in government. SPLM is a political organization that is not in government. It was intended because after the announcement of Chairman Selfa in June 2013 that the SPLM institution date has expired by May 2013 because that was the time we are supposed to have our convention after 5 years. They went and established this new organization outside the SPLM constitution.
That's Quel Aguer Quel, a member of the Outlawed Civil Society Group, the People's Coalition for Civic Action. He spoke with me from Nairobi yesterday. From Nairobi, we move to Cairo, where a conference called together to stop the war in Sudan brought political parties and civilian groups in Cairo for 2 days, and they concluded their discussions with a consensus on forming a committee for peacekeeping in Sudan to push forward discussions and follow up on relevant efforts to reach lasting peace in the country. David Monda, professor of political science at City University of New York, discussed the outcome of the conference with VOA's senior analyst Mohammed Al-Ashanawi.
It's a positive step on the diplomatic front, but without the government, the Sudan Armed Forces, and without the RSF being at the table, I think the prospects for this peace initiative to be successful are really bleak, because you need to have the two protagonists that are central to this conflict at the table. I think the second question is, there's a tension between this civilian-led process and the military generals, because at the heart of the Sudan conflict is the RSF and the Sudan Armed Forces do not want to be subordinate to any form of civilian control or civilian oversight. So I think that even further complicates this diplomatic effort. And it will be interesting to see how Egypt, as the big brother in the region, is able to articulate its diplomatic networks so the other major powers that are also involved in the region can also bring these two generals to the table. Because I'm still very skeptical about how a civilian-led process is going going to resolve this conflict when the two generals are not at the table.
Sudanese political and civil forces who met in Cairo stressed the need to stop the war immediately and work to provide urgent humanitarian needs for the Sudanese people. They also called for the necessity of adhering to the Jeddah Declaration and developing mechanisms for implementation. Would that move the needle after failed Saudi and U.S. mediation?
Again, when you do not have the two major belligerents, the RSF and the Sudan Armed Forces at the table, it ends up just being meaningless words in terms of the Jeddah Declaration. We have to remember that both of these two military factions have used ceasefire agreements, have used efforts to distribute humanitarian aid as pauses in the fighting so that they can rearm their military forces. And then they can also benefit from that same humanitarian aid to actually entrench their two positions. So it's really a fairly difficult situation, because as much as these civilian groups are calling for ceasefire and calling for the armed factions to lay down their weapons, the reality on the ground is very different, whereby General al-Burhan feels there is a military avenue to victory in terms of this war. And General Dagalo Hemedit also feels that there is a military solution. And the other issue here is that both sides are very well armed and very well financed. So the government side has its support from Saudi Arabia and from Egypt. But the RSF also has support from Russia and from the United Arab Emirates, in addition to tacit backing from countries like Chad. So until there's the two generals are actually at the table, until you have these major regional powers that are involved, and then you also have the civilian component, it's going to be very difficult to see anything different than a prolonged continuation of this armed struggle.
Some government officials and leaders of rebel factions refused to sign the conference statement, including Malik Aqar, Vice President of Sudan's Sovereignty Council, Jibril Ibrahim, Finance Minister and leader of a faction of the Justice and Equality Movement, and Minni Minawi, Governor of Darfur Region and the leader of the Sudan Liberation Movement faction. What do you make of that?
That's a red flag. That tells you that this diplomatic initiative will be dead on arrival. Major factions within the civilian coalition have refused to sign the agreement. Let's not forget that 70% of the internally displaced people are actually from Darfur. So this further complicates the issue, because General Hemedit, leader of the RSF, is actually from Darfur. As the Sudan Armed Forces continues to face pressure from the rebels in Darfur, there is a high likelihood that Darfur could actually break away from Sudan proper, and that will encourage other regions to also try and break away from Sudan. Right now, it seems that this war and the humanitarian crisis will actually get worse, unfortunately, before it becomes better.
That's Professor Manda of New City University of New York speaking with VOA's senior analyst Mohammed Al-Ashanawi. That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday, June 9, 2024. Again, we want to wish a happy independence to our listeners in South Sudan. We now leave you with Mawa and the song Mama.
Yeah, this song is a special dedication to all the mothers out there, as a sign of appreciation, as a sign of love. Mawa. Wana Minga. Shanita Billy Go,
ya haja itader shalakan haja al ana mabia der ashani tataban waratai mina na suker itageni hani sana kanana gikore kati yana mi motoro kama sekete itageni kore kore kanana gijerejere ashankede ana mawaka.
We've been listening to Mawa and the song Mama. I'm your host John Tanza on this live broadcast from Studio 13 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer Kwame Ofori and engineer Carl Starling, we wish you a lovely Independence Anniversary evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.